Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Cathode Ray Mission. I'm your host, Adam Ferens. And tonight we are joined by Carl Kafer. Say hello.
Greetings, salutations, people.
Sammy Giuliano, say hello.
Hello, hello.
And Alan Bryan, who just joined us, say hey.
I'm here, finally.
All good. So, tonight we're going to do one of our broad looks, not a deep dive, but a broad look at what I call unusual anthologies, those series which explore horror, science fiction, fantasy, and, well, similar themes, unusual themes. Shows like Thriller, One Step Beyond, the Alfred Hitchcock Presents, Twilight Zone, Outer Limits, and how these shows were really, really popular for a while. There seemed to be a lot of them on TV. Then they kind of fell off, and then they kind of came back, and then they fell off again. And we are going to look at how these shows have descendants that are on television, but not quite in the way we think of classic anthologies. So the first thing I'm going to ask is, Carl, do you have a favorite unusual anthology series?
That's a really hard question, okay? I mean, I grew up, I'm older than you guys, more than likely all of you, but I grew up right at the cusp of the great ones in terms of like Twilight Zone, you know, One Step Beyond, Thriller. I saw all those either first run or first syndication. But if I have to say of those type of shows, what my favorite is, as much as I love Twilight Zone and I adore Twilight Zone, I have to say Outer Limits. I think Outer Limits is just an incredible show.
It's a great show. Now, Sammy, what is your favorite of these unusual anthologies?
Again, was it that Kyle that spoke previously?
That was Kyle.
Mentioned, oh, it was Carl, okay. He mentioned age. I wonder, I'm 65, so I wonder.
So you're a little older than I am. I'm 62.
Yeah, I thought so. I've been around since 1954, which predates all these series. You asked me a question as to what my favorite was. Actually, to be honest with you, that it changes almost week to week. When you figure in the Twilight Zone and the Outer Limits, the original one, of course, and Boris Karloff's Thriller, and then I have some lingering fondness for One Step Beyond and Night Gallery, and even the show that's much more recent, The X-Files, which I think copied their format in some ways, but we're sticking to the old shows. If you had to hold me to one for tonight, I'll hold the torch to Thriller.
Yeah, Thriller is a great show, and we're going to definitely spend some time diving into that one and One Step Beyond, because I think those are two that deserve a spotlight. So, Alan, do you have a favorite unusual anthology?
An unusual anthology?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about unusual. I like Twilight Zone is probably, but I have a fondness for Alfred Hitchcock Presents.
Another great one here.
I don't know, I watched a lot of that one and Twilight Zone back in the 60s. I'm 60 next week, so I'm the third oldest, and Adam, you know, is only like 22. So,
38. But I'll be 39 in February.
Yeah, right. And I like, I maybe it's because I haven't, I have 4 or 5 seasons of Alfred Hitchcock on DVD, and I have the complete Twilight Zone on Blu-ray, and I've got the complete Outer Limits, and I've got Suspense and Thriller, and I've got them all on DVD, and I've watched quite a few of them. And Now, I'm going to throw one out there to you. I'm going to throw you a curveball because I also like Death Valley Days. Now, I know that's Western, but still, it's an anthology series, and I like it.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a good show.
I know it well. I also know it well. Yep. Mm-hmm.
I have three seasons of it on DVD from the 50s, and, you know, that's one I like to watch. And I know you guys may not think of it, but to me, Wagon Train was an anthology show because it focused on a different family every week and sometimes. And if you get, like, some of the Wagon Trains on DVD, you know, well, you got a main character here and there, but they would focus on different people a lot. And even Gunsmoke did that in its last couple of years. So,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm going to go with my favorite. I'm going to give a slight edge to Alfred Hitchcock just because of the twist endings. Some of them scared the heck out of me when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think mine is going to have to be Twilight Zone, even though I really do have a fondness for Outer Limits and a real appreciation for some of Night Gallery and One Step Beyond, and hell, I even really like the 90s version of Outer Limits, which I thought overall was an outstanding show. But before we get into that, I do want to take just a second or two to allow Sammy, who is appearing on the show for the first time, to do a little bit of an introduction for himself. Now, Sammy, you run a pretty interesting little blog, so why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm a veteran school teacher, I haven't retired yet, and I work in a New Jersey school where my wife is the principal, and I've worked now as a teacher for 36 years. My major is English literature, and I teach writing and literature classes to the younger kids at this particular juncture in my career. But I, for the sake of this discussion, the blog is more important. And yes, Wonders in the Dark is the name of the blog, and it was founded in 2008. A friend of mine who has since passed away at a young age of 43, tragically of cancer, I met him online. We became best of friends. I spoke to him numerous times a day. He's one of the greatest writers I've ever encountered, the bar none, the greatest film maniac that you could ever find. And he and I started this blog site, and we fueled it with reviews. He mainly wrote all film reviews, actually. I wrote some film reviews, but then we branched out into television, into theater, into book reviews, into music, into opera. But it's a site that continues to thrive to this day. I'm running it with some other friends. Adam has written numerous reviews in a series of countdowns, the television countdowns most prominently. And I'm always at the site. I spend, you know, time at it every day. I do all the updates. I do the best films of the year list, which just came out this past week, the top 50 movies of the decade. So there's a lot of activity. There's a lot of enthusiasm there. I just wanted to add one thing, though. However, when we were discussing our favorite anthologies and someone just brought up the Westerns, I also would like to throw out The Naked City, which is one of the greatest television anthologies ever. It's a cop drama, and it's a follower, Route 66. These were great, great police anthology series. The Naked City is you know, one of the all-time classics in any genre. So I think that could be also brought up.
Naked City is one that really deserves a new release on DVD or Blu-ray.
It's on DVD,
but
it's
it needs
on
a better one.
Set,
I didn't like the transfer.
Well,
it could be improved.
Be happy you got anything. Be happy you got anything.
Yeah, well, that's what they said, that we should be appreciative. It's never going to be given to us in any way. Actually, some of the episodes look damn good. There's a few that you know, they're a little ragged, but I would say for the most part, most of it looks pretty presentable. I have to say, it's an amazing series.
Yes, it is, and I'm glad to have that. Any old, you know, just having any old series that's an anthology from the 50s, whether it's Death Valley Days or Thriller, you know, and if you can, and suspense, if you can get any of those, you just thank your lucky stars that they're available, and somebody decided to put them out there.
You know, I'm going to throw in here for a second, if I can, because we're talking for the. I just want to make sure we mention one show, even though I've only seen a couple episodes on YouTube, but the man who really started this, and he started it in radio, and then it came on TV, I think, in 1947, is Arch Obler and Lights Out. Let's not forget Arch Obler. I just wanted to make sure we mentioned him.
Well, why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about him, Carl?
Yeah, well, Arch Obler, it's Lights Out. I had the chance to listen to a lot of the radio programs when I was in Chicago because Stan Freberg had his show, and he would do these radio things. And Obler is a really interesting character. He predates Leslie Stevens in The Outer Limits, but he did a lot of the same things. He did a film called Five, which is the first post-nuclear film that I know of anyway. And he did a number of things, but he did this show called Lights Out, and it was very popular on radio. And then when it came into TV, unfortunately, most of the episodes do not survive. There are a couple on YouTube, but I'm telling you, really good writing. They were O. Henry twist at the end. It did get into supernatural and also mystery, so it wasn't just, you know, science fiction or mystery. It was a number of things. He even had a comedy show at one point. But he's a very interesting character, and just anyone who's interested in the history of these type of shows, check him out. You know, he's on. You know, you can check out the wiki and there's even a website dedicated to his memory. So definitely check out Arch Obler. That's Obler. And do any of you guys ever seen or heard the radio version of Lights Out?
Of course, I've got cassettes of it, of all things, and CDs.
Yeah,
my wife was big into buying radio shows on CD. So yes.
I'm not as familiar with it as you guys. I know of it, but I can't profess any familiarity.
Yeah, I've seen like one episode. I'm aware of it, but I'm not as intimately familiar with it as Carl and Alan. It is one of the ones I need to.
And just to be clear, I'm much more familiar with the radio show than I am the TV, because there's only like two or three episodes that have survived.
I understand.
So go on from there, guys. Sorry, I hijacked the show.
No. You know, these sorts of sidebars or diversions are what make the show fun. So, yeah, now, you know, I've mentioned this before, but sometime back in the late 90s or early 2000s, some science fiction and fantasy panel had a debate, and they decided that there were really three seminal science fiction series. And the first was Twilight Zone, the second was Star Trek, and the third was, believe it or not, Babylon 5. But I've always thought that Twilight Zone kind of, and this is no insult to science fiction, but that it encompassed more than science fiction, whereas something like The Outer Limits was almost strictly science fiction with a little bit of a horror bent. Would you guys agree that Twilight Zone, while definitely, you know, telling morality tales, of doing little morality plays of, you know, dressed in unusual clothing wasn't strictly science fiction.
No, it wasn't. No way was that strictly science fiction. I agree.
I also agree it was absolutely not science fiction. Some episodes were, but it had a combination of humor, morality shows, few horror episodes like Night Call and The Howling Man and stuff like that. But
which I just rewatched
it wasn't,
today.
Oh, okay. But it wasn't. Science fiction was the outer limits. That was, you know, 98% science fiction. The Twilight Zone was a melting pot of a lot of different genres that just it clicked and worked so well because it had that tagline at the end. It taught morals that were dear to Rod Serling and some of his writers. But it was a mixture of a lot of things. As the others here have indicated as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Now, one show that I do want to ask, now everybody here has seen One Step Beyond, right?
Oh, yeah.
Now,
yeah.
The host of that was Newell. And Newell, of course, directed many, many episodes of Thriller, including some of the better ones. So
well,
what do we all think
one.
Of
the best one? Yeah,
pretty much the best ones. Because he did both Marcus, Incredible Dr. Markerson, and Pigeons from Hell. Yes.
No, he did The Return of Andrew Bentley. Believe it or not, Markerson was done by Robert Flory, who was
the director of
Murders of the Rue Morgue. You know, the old movie from the 30s, and he did that later in his life.
Mm-hmm. But now I was going to say, so what do we all think of One Step Beyond? Because that is definitely unusual because it's not strictly, you know, science fiction or fantasy or horror. It's kind of urban mythology.
Paranormal.
Writ large.
Hmm.
So what does everybody think of it?
I think it's a mixed bag. I don't think it's entirely successful. It's weaker than all those other series. It has some highlight episodes, but it you know, there's more stinkers on that show than any of the series. I like some episodes, but I don't think it's especially distinguished, except for the fact that it was influential at that time and maybe inspiring other shows to come out. But looking back now, it's a dated show, and it's just not all
Absolutely.
That effective.
So, Carl, what do you think?
To me, I tend to agree with the consensus. It was a show that I liked, the show that I watched. But then again, when I was that young, I watched everything like this, right? But it doesn't stay in the memory. And the reason it doesn't stay in the memory is in a lot of ways it was ho hum. It didn't have the touch of Serling, you know, that sense of, or it didn't have the scares that Outer Limits had, or it didn't have the macabre sense of humor that Hitchcock had.
No, it didn't.
It was missing something. Okay.
Alan, thoughts?
Yes.
Well,
I'll agree with what Carl said.
I mean, I keep bringing it up, but I do think it is kind of a minor show, but I think it's almost undeniable in terms of almost being a John the Baptist lighting the way for better series to come.
I agree with that. I definitely agree with that.
I think the creator of the show... Newland was a talented man, and he was a man with a vision. I think that basically it just didn't come off in its entirety. You know, it had spotty episodes. Some were better than others, and I thought Newland was he was like Joseph Stefano of The Outer Limits. He was someone who was a very studious, literate man. He had a lot of talent writing some great shows, but it just didn't all come together.
I will agree with that. Now, because I do want to spend quite a bit of time on the others, but not too much. So, are there any little tiny horror, sci-fi, fantasy series that were anthologies that we haven't mentioned yet that you'd like to throw a little bit of a shout out to?
I would like to mention one, which is a continuation of, I can't remember everybody's name. Who's the one who mentioned Alfred Hitchcock Presents?
I did.
Me.
Okay. Now, as a continuation of that, there's the more obscure, although I have connected with all the episodes on DVD in three-year sets, the Alfred Hitchcock Hour, which follows Alfred Hitchcock Presents. And there are some really splendid episodes, one of the scariest episodes ever, in the house with the maid in the house. And I can't get it at the top of my head, but there's some really great episodes in the Alfred Hitchcock Hour, which came out afterwards. I think that should be thought of or mentioned in the same context.
I agree. I should have also added that in, but I was including that when I mentioned the one.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, you were correct.
No, I figured when you mentioned the one, you probably were encompassing both of them. Yeah, I figured. Mm-hmm.
So, anybody else?
I want to mention an anthology that's not scary, but one that had a big impact on me as a kid. And that's Masterpiece Theater, the British import that was on PBS.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll tell you, I'll say why. Mm-hmm. Is because that brought me the Lord Peter Wimsey Mysteries. That brought me Brother Cadfael Mysteries again. And it brought me, of course, Upstairs, Downstairs. And a lot of other great television came through Masterpiece Theater. Alistair Cook just introducing these shows that were splendid and commercial-free and just period pieces and slices of things. Wow, where did that come from? You know, and that for me in the 70s, up and through the 80s, whenever I could watch it, I did.
Oh, no, that's great stuff. Masterpiece Theater, it definitely has its place in history, bringing so much great television to the U.S. I mean, Upstairs, Downstairs, Brother Cadfael, Downton Abbey, for something much more recent. I know that, that's not universally beloved by everybody, but it was a Masterpiece Theater product over here. So,
was our Downton Abbey back then, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, oh yeah, I mean, what was it? It was Jean Marsh, and do you remember who the other lady was? Because that was created by two women. Do you remember who the other person was?
Not off the top of my head. Another one. I'm gonna throw another show out there. It was actually Prime Time, and it was not really your strict anthology. That was the Baldwins. And that ran for 3 or 4 years on NBC.
Oh yeah, that I would call that an anthology, absolutely.
Yeah, because that did like those one season ones, didn't it?
Yeah. Did the name of the game do so? Did you call that an anthology or no? Was it not?
No, I wouldn't call that an anthology.
No, but Bold Ones was.
Yeah, Bold Ones definitely was.
Mm-hmm. Playhouse 90 was on for a couple of years too. They did a couple of decent things, and CBS would do did a lot of that sort of CBS Playhouse. CBS Playhouse in the 50s and other times. They did a lot of things.
Yeah, they did, but the focus, those are great shows, and we're going to touch on those. But the focus tonight is going to be on the more unusual ones, and in hopes of keeping this focused on that, I want to turn first to the Outer Limits. Now, does everyone have their favorite Outer Limits list ready?
Yeah, I do. But since I didn't come up with two quick ones, I just wanted to mention one particular show. We talked about Twilight Zone.
Mm.
But you know what? The 1980s remake of Twilight Zone is damn good, and people forget about that. It's so good.
No, I got that on DVD, too, because I love that show. Not as much as the original, but it was a good one.
Well, you know what? I will tell you this about the 80s one. They did the perfect version of my favorite Harlan Ellison story. And that one is the one about the timepiece. What's the name of that? Paladin of the Lost Hour.
Repent Harlequin, said the TikTok man.
No. It's Paladin of the Lost Hour is the one I'm talking about.
Okay, I get it. Yeah.
And that was just fantastic. Danny Kaye was so good in that. And that's a show that, you know, we see all these reboots of Twilight Zone, and none of them make it close to what the original was. But this one comes closest. The 80s version is really, really good. So I just wanted to make that.
I'm a big fan of both the remakes of Twilight Zone and Outer Limits, which I know, you know, it's fashionable to bash on them, but I think they're great. And I think that the Twilight Zone remake in the 80s, I think there was a lot of resentment left over in some circles for the movie where Vic Morrow was killed. And people were misplacing their anger.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But it was a pretty great show. And you know, The Outer Limits, of course, wasn't just about remaking. Just like as with Twilight Zone, it wasn't just about remaking it. There were all new stories. And hell, the first episode of the Outer Limits, Sand Kings, that's a stone cold classic as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, I agree.
Oh, yes.
I agree.
This may be silly, but you know, everybody, you know, both the Outer Limits and Twilight Zone have iconic openings. But as much as the original Outer Limits, you know, has an undeniably classic opening. I really, really, really love the opening sequence for the remake, for the Showtime version.
Right. Oh, I agree.
And that thing was winning, what was it, Cable Ace Awards and Hugo Awards left and right there for a while. Just a phenomenal show that doesn't get enough attention anymore.
No, it doesn't. Not by a long shot. Okay, but we were going to go to the original one, right?
Yep. So I want everybody to list their top few episodes. So we'll go to you, Carl.
Okay, that is a good question. But I can tell you this. The Outer Limits had a episode that made me bawl, cry like a baby at the end. And can you guess which one it is?
No.
The Man Who Was Never Born. No.
Nope. Exactly. Thank you. When it was revealed what Robert Culp's character had to go through, and I got it, and I must have been only about 6 or 7 when I saw this. I saw it first run. I literally bawled myself to sleep. That's how powerful that episode is.
It's the greatest episode of the 49 episodes of the show, without any question.
And, of course, it's Harlan Ellison. And so I was introduced to Harlan Ellison, you know, and he was in my DNA, and then I started looking for him, and then I saw Dangerous Visions, and my whole life changed once I read Dangerous Visions. But the other episode that I love is the one with David McCallum as the miner who gets
the sixth finger. The sixth finger is the name of that.
I love
that
one
of the
too.
Most beautifully poignant, powerful, one of the top five on the show, I think, without a doubt.
Oh, I agree. I agree. Mm-hmm. So those would be my two favorites.
Okay, that's great choices.
So yep, going to you, Sammy, next. So what are yours?
I have to repeat that one of my two favorites is obviously Demon with a Glass Hand, which we just talked about. I have to second the motion on that. And then for the other one, after that, there's a number of them that I could say. I'm tempted to say Architects of Fear or The Form of Things Unknown, but I'm going to go with an episode called a Feasibility Study, which is about one day it becomes very, very dark and ominous in the sky, and it turns out where these aliens have taken 6 to 8 blocks, human blocks from Earth, and brought the blocks onto their planet because they basically want to... they want to develop our culture onto their planet, and the humans that are, you know, and they're imprisoned in that 6-block radius. Then and it's a very atmospheric, brooding, eerie episode when the aliens, of course, the Outer Limits aliens are always kind of cheesy the way they make them look. But they didn't have much money, but it's where they lacked in visual. You know, makeup and special effects, they made up for it in script. And, you know, that episode was also, I believe, remade into the second Outer Limits, I believe. But I'm not as familiar with the second Outer Limits as I am with the original. But it still holds up to this day. It's a disorienting episode, you know, from the beginning to the end. So those would be my two that I'll choose for this show, Demon with a Glass Hand and a Feasibility Study. But obviously there's a dozen more that could or should be mentioned in this discussion.
Well, Carl stole mine, and you took one of my honorable mentions. So, Alan, your turn.
I'm going with Demon with a Glass Hand and an episode called Nightmare.
Now, which one was Nightmare?
Nightmare.
That was
one yep.
where there... The Earth is attacked by a planet, and the soldiers are told to fight the enemy, and they're captured, and they're tortured and everything by the enemy, and they get paranoid because and such. And then there's some Earth officers amongst the hostile aliens. And then you find out it was just a big test of the troops and, you know, and such like that. So, you know, something about that episode resonated with me back then, and I still like it. I don't know why. It's called Nightmare. That's one. But Demon of the Glass Hand. And then Soldier's a close third, close, you know, but. That was you know, similar to the Terminator, but I have
I was actually going to mention. Does anybody want to get into the allegations by Harlan Ellison and his people against James Cameron and his people concerning plagiarism and Terminator?
They're not allegations. That was settled out of court, and Cameron was absolutely. And another thing, that's not the.
Yeah, I agree. It was stolen.
Did it with that guitar too. And settled out.
Yeah, there's a lot of there's
yeah,
too much similarity.
Yeah, to this day, Cameron doesn't want to admit what he did, even though there was money that was sent to Ellison by way of apology as well as a credit in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Can I throw a trivia question in here? I'm sure somebody's going to get it immediately. What
mm-hmm.
famous film was shot in the Bradbury Building where the Demon with a Glass Hand was shot? What famous film was also utilized?
Was that Blade Runner?
Yes, it was. You got it. Ding, 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 ding. Right answer. Blade Runner indeed, yeah.
Beat me to it.
Well, you know, it's interesting that we mentioned Blade Runner because, of course, Sid Mead just passed recently.
Right.
Yeah.
Hold on. Yeah.
But, you know, and now there's something, you know, we have this a lot of Philip K. Dick stuff, speaking of Blade Runner, on TV right now, including an anthology series. But we'll get to that maybe a little later if there's time. But I want to go back to Twilight Zone. And does everybody have maybe a top 3 to 5 for Twilight Zone?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Sammy, let's start with you.
I know I'm going to steal everybody else's favorite when I mention this one. I'm pretty sure that at least one or maybe two of the group is going to say they love it best also, but I'm going to mention it anyway. That's Time Enough at Last with Burgess Meredith, which, of course, is arguably the most popular episode on the show, but or with good reason, about the shy bank teller who loves to read, Burgess Meredith, and then he reads, and then the world blows up, and he's the only one alive, and then he finds stacks and stacks of books at a devastated library, and then he's about to read the first of the piles in front of him, and then he falls over, his glasses fall off his face, and they bust, and then he has no way of seeing, and he says, it's not fair, it's not fair. That one really captured people's imagination because of the poignancy. People felt so terribly. Merrick had gone through such hell with abuse from his wife, from his boss. Nobody wanted to appreciate his love of reading. And in the end, he doesn't have anything left. I that stands to me the most resonant episode. But, I mean, it's like apples and oranges. There's at least another 50 that you could come out with and make cases for as your favorite. But you asked me what my favorite one was. That would be that, and my runner-up would be Walking Distance with Gig Young, which was also from the first season, nostalgic wallowing of the past, something that Serling was very good, adept at in his screenplays. But I don't want to hog this up. I gave you two. I don't want to go all the way to 5. I'd rather let the other people take over now and give theirs.
Okay. So let's go to Alan next.
I'm going to go with the one that I liked. It was called The Invaders. And you have an old woman in a cabin, and she's being attacked by some tiny little thing, you know, and then you find out at the end it's a U.S. Space Probe 1, and they're the tiny invaders, and they ended up in this somewhere. I don't know if they traveled through time and went back in time and were smaller, seeing somebody larger, or if they were in a world that was similar to ours, but they were more primitive. It's just really pretty. You think you don't know what she's fighting, and then you realize she's actually hitting some astronauts, you know, and it was so brilliantly done. But when you're watching it as a kid, it was that one really hit you, you know. And of course, the Burgess Meredith one was great too. And To Serve Man is probably my other one. If I got to pick, if I'll pick two, and then To Serve Man, which is based on, I believe, on a short story by, it was a 1950 short story. Damon Knight wrote it, the science fiction writer, and it was adapted by Serling. And these aliens come, you know, and they talk about taking people to their planet, and really nice, and they feed you well and everything. And, yeah, that's the twist at the
great
end.
Ending.
Yeah, great ending.
Here, I have to do this. It's a cookbook.
Right.
Yeah. That's
the,
yeah. Yeah.
You find out. They're taking it. They're feeding everybody well on the trip to their planet. But yeah, it's because.
It's not a transport ship. It's a cattle car.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, you know,
there you go.
No. Those were all great episodes. But I have to say that I could choose any one of those. But of course, Time Enough at Last is an undeniable classic. But I've always had a real soft spot for The Howling Man. I just think that even though it's a little over the top, it's so evocative. That it just works for me.
Another great one. Yeah, no doubt about it. It's one of the great ones. That's what I think.
So if I could pop in here and say a couple of mine.
Yep, you next.
Okay, so everyone that's been mentioned would be on my list. But there's a couple others. And let's face it, it's fine. Irwin could become preachy, but usually hit it on the head. And there are two I want to talk about. One is The Monsters are on Maple Street.
Uh-huh.
Which
I
think is just
that.
I think that's a brilliant thing about prejudice and you know, difference and it's just so dead on. Even today, even more so today, maybe, in a lot of ways, because we as a society separate all the others, you know, different than us. And if you're different than me, then you're not good. And of course, it's all that paranoia. But on the opposite end, this is one that isn't as mentioned as often, because a lot of people consider it trickly. But I love this, and I actually posted the character's speech at the end over Christmas. That would be The Night of the Meek. With Art Carn.
Art Carn and Santa Claus. Yep.
Drunken Santa Claus. The speech in there that he does is just unbelievably well written. And of course, it's a Sorling episode. And he wrote it. And it just really, really resonates with me. You know, about the whole sense of commercialization of Christmas and all that. And don't forget that at the same time, you had Stan Freberg doing Green Christmas, like a couple years earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is a brilliant episode, and it's not nearly as well thought of as some of the other episodes.
Yep.
Alan, did you, Adam, did you, nobody's mentioned it, so I just wanted to bring this up because I know that Twilight Zone fanatics will always mention Nightmare at 20,000 Feet with William Shatner on the airplane. That's, you know, that was redone. I mean, it was done in the film, and it remains, you know, one of the most wildly popular episodes in the series. I wanted to know if everybody else agreed that it deserved its reputation.
I think it does deserve its reputation, but there's one that also has Shatner in it where I think Shatner was even better. And
yes,
the name
I
of
agree.
It
I know
gave me
Nick of Time. Nick of Time, right?
Yep, the one
yeah.
where he's sitting there with the little fortune telling doll at the diner.
Yes, yes.
And
right.
he becomes obsessed with it. And it's people like to shit on Shat. But when he puts his mind to it and he gets the script he's invested in, he can actually do good work.
Yeah, that's a great episode. Yeah, it's a disturbing episode, but very, very well done. Yeah, I can't argue that.
It's a phenomenal portrait of obsession.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Like the guy with the gambler, remember with the obsessive the gambler, and he kept feeding money into the robot.
Yeah.
Yep. But now I want to turn our focus for a while to Thriller. Now, there were two shows by the name of Thriller. There was the show that was from Hammer and had slightly longer episodes, and that's a fine show, and if there's time, we'll talk about that. But I want to talk about the show that is typically known as Boris Karloff's Thriller. And because he loves this show so much and ranks it in his top 10 TV programs of all time, I'm going to let Sammy do the introductions for this show, and he can tell us about it, and he can come up with his top 5 or maybe even his top 10. So, Sammy, the floor is yours.
Well, I think, I certainly do love the show. It's been an obsession of mine from many years ago. I bought it on bootleg tape on eBay and was trying to copy from television runs, and then I bought it on Laserdisc, but there were only 6 episodes on that Laserdisc, even though they were, to this day, the best quality transfers. And then we were lucky enough to get the Image DVD set of the entire series with many commentaries, including Tim Lucas and Gary Gerani did some of them. I think he did Pigeons from Hell, by the way. And it's a show that, when it clicked, you know, it brought together a lot of great elements, craftsmanship. Benjamin H. Klein was mainly the cinematographer. Some of the shows were, you know, they showcased German Expressionism, and Jerry Goldsmith's music, to this day, it's one of the greatest television scores that's ever been done. I mean, and he brought the emotions of each different episode out beautifully, and, you know, they have been bringing out his scores on CD from the Prague Orchestra, and I've been collecting them because they themselves should be, you know, collected separately. But the horror episodes are obviously the best. And putting together a list, I mentioned Pigeons from Hell, which was adopted from a Robert Harwood short story, very, very famous. And it was one of the most impressive performances from the young Brandon DeWilde, who died at 30 years old, tragically in an accident in Denver. And DeWilde fans, even though he was famous in Shame and in HUD, you know, they always bring up that performance. Incidentally, he was in a great Twilight Zone, The Sorcerer's Apprentice, which we didn't even get to that. But anyways, Pigeons from Hell would probably be my number one, but very, very close behind it would be The Cheaters, which is about a pair of glasses whoever holds those glasses puts them on their face. They're able to read people's minds. So you can imagine the mayhem that ensues. Then there's the one that you mentioned earlier, The Incredible Dr. Markison, which is just, Stephen King said it best. He says that's the most horrifying episode, hour of television in television history, especially at the end where the main character, who was Richard Dick York, when he goes and sees his wife, you know, come out of a coffin. She's, you know, the undead. It was horrific, but the whole thing was horrific, and Karloff was at his best in that episode. He was never better, and he only appeared 4 times in the series. He did all the introductions, but only 4 times did he actually appear in the episodes. And he was greatest in Markison. He was very, very good also in The Premature Burial, which is a favorite of mine, but I don't know if I put it among the top. The Weird Tailor is the one that stayed in my mind the longest because I saw it when I was like 8 years old. A babysitter put it on in the house, and I had nightmares days after. And to this day, it's just horrifying when a mannequin comes to life after a tailor constructs this demonic cloak for this man who was once a millionaire whose son died. He wanted to bring him back to life, and then he goes and he finds people and a book that tells him how to do it, but it has to be done at a certain time because it's a devilish treatise. And so it ends horrifically as well, very, very frightening. And then there's the, I'm sorry, then there is, in addition to those, there's Waxworks, which is a very, very gothic episode, very, very frightening, and the Grim Reaper with William Shatner. He tries to dupe his aunt out of money, and then this portrait comes to life. This character with a scythe in his hand goes after the people, and that's always identified by the lovers of thriller as one of the favorite episodes. And then there are two others I'll mention, and then I'll let it go because I don't want to hog everything. But the other two I'll mention is Well of Doom with Henry Danielle, which has one of the most disoriented musical scores that you'll ever hear. And it's set on the moors. It's a horrifying episode. It turns out, falls apart at the end a little bit when you find out the whole thing was a deceit. But for like 90% of it, you know, you're totally terrified. And then there's The Devil's Ticket with McDonald Carey, where a man meets the devil, and then he makes a portrait, and he thinks he has the devil duped at the end, but then the tables are turned on him. But again, that's, you know, one of the great shows. It's always identified as one of the favorite thrillers, but there are others, and I'm certainly not going to hog anymore. I've already done too much.
Yeah, well, I before turning it over to Alan or Carl, will put mine in, and I have to say that my top 10, and I've got them in front of me, because it's been a little while since I've seen the show, and I wanted to make sure that I had my top 10, which I made when I last saw the show, and my top 10 are Pigeons from Hell, The Cheaters, The Devil's Ticket, The Incredible Dr. Markison, The Grim Reaper, Mr. George, The Hungry Glass, The Purple Room, A Good Imagination, and La Strega, although the runners are Premature Burial, The Weird Tailor, and The Well of Doom.
Right. Right, yeah. It's a good list. It certainly is. And Mr. George is a magical episode that's completely different than any other on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Great list.
Thank you. So I will turn this over to Carl now. So, Carl, what are your thoughts on Thriller, and what are your favorite episodes?
Well, unfortunately, I would say I don't remember much of it because I haven't seen Thriller since I've been about 8. And that's over 50 years ago. Now, that being said, I tell you what I do remember, and I will always cherish him, and that's Boris Karloff. Boris Karloff, to me, is even as iconic as Rod Serling is, when it comes to a horror show, Boris Karloff is the perfect host. Period. That voice, that whole image of him. And, of course, I grew up with Frankenstein and watching Frankenstein and all that. So to me, I need to revisit all these. I do remember, I certainly have seen the Pigeon one, and I've seen the Premature Burial one, too. I've seen both of those, and I remember those. And they're very, very good. But to me,
oh, yeah,
it's always about George Karloff. It's always about George Karloff. So that's what I have to say.
So next up is, of course, Alan. And Alan, what do you have to say about Thriller, and what are your favorite episodes?
Well, it's been a while since I watched until Wednesday, I didn't even know I was doing this show. I kind of forgot. But there's a couple I can think of, and there was The Pigeon, of course. There's The Devil's Ticket. There was another one that Yours Truly, Jack the Ripper.
That's a really good one.
Yeah. There's something here. There was an odd one with Leslie Nielsen. I think it might have been the first episode I ever saw. Was the Twisted Image?
Twisted Image. Yep.
Yeah. And a crazy one, and the only reason I remember it now is because Alfred's butler, Alan Napier, was in it, and was Rip Torn, of all things, called the Purple Room, I guess? Yeah.
The Purple Room,
yeah,
yes.
The Purple Room, yes. And because anything Alan Napier was in after he was on Batman, you know, if I saw it, I was like, I'm a big fan. You know, because all he was in after, I always thought was didn't get enough recognition. But,
That's the ones
that I can't think of 10 off the top of my head, but I those are the ones that I remember. I need to pull it off the shelf and watch the whole series again. But there's a lot of shows I need to do that with.
Yep.
Good stuff.
So I want to ask a question. Would you consider, as Stephen King does, Thriller, any of you, to be the greatest pure horror anthology ever made for television?
I do. I absolutely do. I don't think there's another show in that genre that's eclipsed it. The quality, it didn't always click. The crime episode started off poorly. There was a bad period maybe after the dozen or so masterpieces that came out. It kind of weakened, but overall, on the strength of the 15 to 20 treasures that are in that series, I would say that it is the greatest horror series in television history. Yes.
Oh,
I dare anyone to say one that's better than it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think Pigeons from Hell is absolutely the freakiest thing I've ever seen on television from that period, except for maybe The Incredible Dr. Markison. That last shot, and you know, people talk about the makeup on the actress that played the wife, but I'm sorry, Dick York's look of horror and the way that he just moaned no, oh no, is what sells it.
Yes, No, that last scene was as horrific, nightmarish as any scene in any episode of any television show. I agree with you.
Yeah, it's nightmare fuel.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm going to do a shout out here to a more recent show.
Mm.
And most people would consider it science fiction, I guess, but whenever I see this show and I see where it goes, I think it's the most depressing and most gut-wrenching show on television right now. And that would be Black Mirror.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
I think Mirror is just absolutely brutal. And it's brutal in such a way where you can see yourself being caught in. You can see yourself and the technology. And I think that is a brilliant show. Now, another show that people are going to bring up as a possible successor to Thriller would be American Horror Story, AHS.
Of course.
I think it varies too much season to season.
I still think that overall it's. I'm not the biggest fan of American Horror Story, but I did see and really enjoy the first two seasons, and I plan on going back and seeing the rest of it at some point. But I think that from what I saw of it, my impression of it is a show that even when it falls on its face, not because it doesn't know what it's doing, but because its reach extends its grasp.
Yeah. And that's one thing that Black Mirror does not. Black Mirror knows exactly what it's doing.
Well, that also helps because you've got, with Black Mirror, you've got pretty much one writer in Charlie Booker.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, and in many ways, I compare that quite favorably to Twilight Zone. Because of that, you have someone who's controlling the message and what he and to be honest, those make me more disturbed than anything that was ever on Thriller or even Outer Limits or the ones that I love from back in the day. Yeah.
Well, the absolute most disgusting thing I've ever seen on television was the pig fucker episode of Black Mirror.
But it's a brilliant, brilliant satire.
It is.
Brilliant. And what he's saying that we'll watch and we'll consume, and that's the whole point. I put that along with Funny Games in a lot of ways. Where the TV show is indicting you as the viewer and saying you're guilty of this. And you know what? We are. I think it's a boring show.
Oh, it's a wonderful show. So, Alan, do you have any more modern shows that you'd like to throw out or any comments on Black Mirror or American Horror Story?
I've only seen a handful of Black Mirror episodes, like three or four. Look at that handful. American Horror Story, I saw the first two seasons, and I liked that. Beyond that, I go back to the Twilight Zone reboot, which I thought was pretty dang good. And I picked that up on DVD that one I did like quite a bit. There was also, once in a while, the old HBO Tales from the Crypt had some fun episodes, but
Thank you for mentioning that. Yes.
It was, it had a few good ones, but it wasn't consistent. There were some good episodes.
The episode that always sticks out in my mind for Tales from the Crypt, and I want to interrupt here, is, and I believe it was an episode directed by Arnold Schwarzenegger with William Hickey, where he plays this old man, this old millionaire, who meets this young woman, and he starts trading body parts with a young bodybuilder in order to impress the woman. But it turns out, and here's spoilers, sorry folks, that it was all a plot to get his money, so that it would essentially be a body swap, and they'd run off with his money, and he'd end up in a young body, but penniless. And that, in my opinion, was right up there with anything that Twilight Zone, Thriller, or The Outer Limits did.
Yeah, that's why I bring it up, was that episode was actually one of those episodes that, I thought was superior, that was a good one.
Okay, we're talking Tales from the Crypt, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes,
so the one I have to mention is the one with William Sadler as the prison executioner. I love that one.
Uh-huh.
You know the one I'm talking about?
I do, yep. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That was one that was directed by Walter Hill, had music by Ry Cooter, and I love that one. That's my favorite of the whole series, easily.
Well, that show ended up having a lot of very interesting writers and directors, and as I recall, one of the main producers on the show was Bob Zemeckis.
Yes.
Yeah.
Zemeckis with Walter Hill, and there were a couple others, too. Remember.
Mm-hmm. Great, great stuff. So we've covered quite a bit. So is there anything a little newer, or would we like to go back and look at something earlier?
I like a
is there anything we've overlooked?
Well,
one at a time, and let's start with Carl.
Okay. Well, what I was going to say was, I just want to mention briefly, because I do like a lot of the episodes, Master of Horror.
Yes.
Yes.
And I think
that
that's a really good show. The second season, not as good as the first. And there were clunkers. There's no question there were clunkers. But there were some really good ones. And just was, if you know the series, is there a favorite episode that, that we all have? I'm just wondering.
Okay, let's start with Sammy. Sammy, have you seen the show, and do you have a favorite?
I'm not really familiar enough with it to venture a sentiment here. I have to pass on that.
Okay.
I'll go with Jennifer's Body. It was Argento. I mean, I can't help it, you know.
Your love of Italian horror showing through again, Alan.
Or it was just called Jennifer, I think, the episode. It was just called Jennifer. But it was the one directed by Argento. It was the Masters of Horror. That's mine.
Yeah, that's a good one. How about you, Adam?
Actually, I'm going to have to go with that's the one episode that I actually remember is the Argento episode, and that was good.
Well, there are several that I think are very good. Cigarette Burns is one. I love the Takashi Miike one, which they wouldn't air. But my favorite, I'm a Joe Dante fan, and the one that he did, the political one about the zombies coming back to vote, I think is brilliant, brilliant satire, and it's hysterical and it's disgusting and wonderful. I hear someone cackling in the background. Do you know that one? It's called Homecoming.
Yeah, I know it. It's good.
All right. That's all I have.
So,
any sentiments on the X-Files, or that's not, that doesn't fall within these parameters?
That doesn't really fall because it's not really an anthology. I mean, there were continuing characters
right,
and storylines.
Right. It's an anthology only to a certain point. I agree with you.
So I want to ask, what is the one thing of the shows that we've been focusing on, Thriller, Twilight Zone, Outer Limits, a little bit of now with Black Mirror and Tales from the Crypt, what is the one thing other than genre that really ties them together and makes them worth remembering and worth revisiting? And I'll start with you, Sammy.
What ties them together? I mean, you know, it may not be horror per se, but it's the shudders that you get from watching them. You know, that they resonate, that you think of them afterwards, and when you talk with people and you want to share some of the scariest things you've seen on television, they all seem to have their share of chills and in different ways, but they all go in that direction, you know. And I obviously I'm more familiar with the older stuff because I grew up with it. And even somebody mentioned earlier Alfred Hitchcock Presents. There's a few episodes like the one where you have a wife crazy. I'm sure the lover of the show that's with us here is going to readily remember it. And she keeps saying, you know, that this man tried to kill her. And then she keeps pointing out, you know, that's him. And then he goes and, he kills an innocent man. Then he gets back in the car and she says to him, no, that's him. And then, you know, it dawns on you, you know, it's, you know, horrifying what had actually happened. So that show, I think, qualifies in some ways with, you know, Lamb to the Slaughter was more humorous than anything else with Barbara Bel Geddes and the, you know, the lamb, you know, feeding the human being to the cops that were there. But I think that there's enough horror that would qualify with the older shows we discussed. But I'm not answering your question, really. I'm kind of going off the beacon track here. But I think it's what the emotions of the horror that connects them. And there are other things, too, but I'll let the others identify them.
Okay, so let's turn it over to Alan next.
Well, a lot of these
a lot of these shows, I know Thriller and Twilight Zone and Outer Limits and such, a lot of them were, some were original stories for the shows, but some of them were also adapting some of the good writers of the day. Robert Block, as I think you say his name is Watch Block, he, the man who gave us Psycho, he was, I know mm-hmm. Scott gets credit for that, but you know, somebody had to write it. You know, he did writing for Thriller. You know, a lot of science fiction writers contributed to Outer Limits and Twilight Zone and other shows. And, of course, we mentioned Harlan Ellison contributing to Outer Limits. And so, you know, they were, there was Ray Bradbury stuff that got adapted for TV and anthologies. So a lot of – some of the best of these shows were you know, were, came from writers and that, you know, are – for the science fiction fans are like, well – hey, those are the elder gods, you know, those are the guys that we've been reading all our lives. And that ties a lot of it together. Plus, in Rod Serling, Hitchcock and these others, you know, they knew who the best were and they knew who to adapt. And that's how that all came together. You had brilliant producers and brilliant directors. Just the right people, the right time, trying to create for what television at the time, when, you know, was 10 years old when a lot of this stuff was really being done at its peak, the late 50s, early 60s. TV had been around since 47, so, you know, so they were writing for, and they were writing for a paycheck, but still. You know, and they had to put the best on the air to win their time slot. And I got to say that, so they got the best writers to adapt the best stories. And that's how you survive in the business. And yeah, I'm sure there was some one-off guys that put out a good one, but some of the best stuff came from the Giants. We've all brought
Absolutely.
Up Harlan Ellison tonight. And, you know, I mean, and he's, and I know with some of you like Robert Block and the others that, and, well, Pigeons from Hell, Robert E. Howard, come on, the creator of Conan. A lot of people listening to us don't realize Pigeons from Hell was a short story by the creator of Conan the Barbarian. So,
oh, absolutely.
Right,
and it's
yeah,
a great one.
I knew that too.
You know, so. We have to let our listeners know. Don't sleep on Howard thinking he just wrote about a barbarian. He wrote other stuff too. He wrote westerns. He wrote tales of boxers. He wrote backwoods stuff. He wrote other sword and sorcery heroes. So you know, it's not just Conan.
No.
I implore listeners to look up all the works of Robert E. Howard.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Sad end for Robert E. Howard.
He died young, too. I think it was a
yes,
suicide, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It was a suicide. Yes, he was young. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
That's the other sad part of that.
He was only 30 years old.
Oh,
yes. I didn't realize he was that young, 30 years old. Boy.
He had a body of work. I mean, he created Solomon Kane. You know, just that character alone, the handful of stories he did for Solomon Kane are worthy of a miniseries. I mean
you're talking about the guy that's the father of the sword and sorcery genre.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah.
Yes, that he is. But Solomon Kane, when I'm bringing him up, he's not sword and sorcery. He's a puritanical adventurer. But
okay.
I say... That would make good TV if they really did him today.
Okay, I'm going to want to jump in here again because no one's asked me yet.
Oh, well, you were next. So good. Let's go.
I would definitely say the writers, but more importantly to me.
Okay, your favorite today.
Hold on. Hello. Hello?
Yeah, we're all here.
Yeah.
I heard something in the background. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think somebody had a radio or a TV on in the background.
Okay. So anyway, what I would say is certainly the writers are important. They do the written word. That's what's spoken. But to me, the reason these shows live on, and we just, of course, went through the New Year's Twilight Zone marathon. But the reason these shows live on is not just the writers, but the people behind them, the people that produce them. And, of course, Twilight Zone was written and produced by Rod Serling. But you take a look at Joseph Stefano and Leslie Stevens of The Outer Limits, and look what else they put out.
Oh, yeah.
Seriously. We were talking about Shatner. Leslie Stevens shot a film in his backyard, basically, called Incubus, which is the only film ever done, I think, in Esperanto. And you have William Shatner overacting in Esperanto, and it's brilliant. Seriously. And that's just Leslie Stevens. These people, and Arch Oakler, who I mentioned at the beginning, these people had a vision of what they wanted to show, what they wanted to say. And we talk about all these shows. Alfred Hitchcock. Alfred Hitchcock presents, he was the first one to hire Robert Altman, the great director. And that was Altman's first work. You get all these people that see talent. And we haven't even really talked about the young talent that were, acting talent who went on to great heights that were in all these shows. The reason they're there is the people that created it saw something and it fit their vision. And so it's the people that produced these shows. John Newland and One Step Beyond, too. All that. So that's what I would say.
A lot of the shows that, I'm just basically repeating it. A lot of the anthology shows, the one I mentioned, The Naked City, for example, was another one where you had, so many stars that made it big, afterwards in film that, some of their earliest work was in The Naked City. And, people like
right.
Robert Duvall and Paul Newman, and it goes on and on and on and on. There's just so many of them that, and that was true with the Twilight Zone in large measure, because there were so many that, have on their resumes one or two or three or more episodes of the Twilight Zone, so that was that was always a barometer of excellence that they were able to do work on that show originally.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Seriously, the number of people that was on that show, Robert Redford, Jack Klugman,
unbelievable.
Jack Warden is in a great episode of The Twilight Zone. Just superb acting. And again, it's the people that were behind it that saw something in these actors that cast them and so on and so forth. It just all coalesced.
And I also want to make sure we don't forget before the night is over, Night Gallery.
Oh, I know that one pretty well, too. That's one another favorite of mine, yeah. Uneven. It's of all the ones we mentioned, that one has the most clunkers because it came out late and Serling lost control of his artistic vision to the studio. He wanted his name taken off the credits at one point. He didn't want nothing to do with it because he was insulted that he wasn't, they didn't speak to him. They edited, they cut things out. They put episodes in that, by inferior writers that he didn't want in. So even though it stands to this day as showcasing some really, really excellent stuff, it has just as much bad stuff. Season 3 is almost completely forgettable. It's in 3 seasons. It was a total washout. The second season it had some great stuff, but then it didn't have it. It was the first season, really, that had the most of the best stuff. But, you know, the stuff that was really good was excellent. It was, you know, you couldn't deny that. And even the show that let it in, the movie that had Roddy McDowell and Joan Crawford, the one directed by Steven Spielberg, Eyes, which was the second of the three. And then there was the third one, which was that the one with was what's his? No, that was I'm confusing it. No, that was in the night. I mean, the Twilight Zone movie where the actor was killed that Adam mentioned earlier.
Right. Moral.
I'm sorry. Yeah. All right. So that's what I have to say about Night Gallery, anyways. But
I'll make one comment about Night Gallery is I own it on DVD and have yet to rewatch it. But the one thing about it is I know there's an episode that dealt with a guy and his fear of spiders or something, and he in them about, and I was 10 or 11 years old, and not much scared me on television. I was scared by Return of Count Yorga in the theater, but on TV, the one thing that scared me, I think he opened his bedroom door and there's a giant spider on the bed, and that freaked me in that episode. And, you know, I'm still afraid to go back and watch it on DVD because I think they'll still scare me at 60. And, but, you know, I mean, just that one scene when he opens the bedroom door and there's a spider in the, and I mean a giant, a spider takes up the whole bed. And I'm like, holy crap. And I jumped away from the television when I saw that. So that Night Gallery scared me, and the only other show that scared me up to that point on TV was Dark Shadows.
Yeah, and then I guess the next one after that was Babylon 5
Mother
when you first saw the Shadows.
Yes, I first saw the Shadows. The Shadows actually freaked me out when I saw them on Babylon 5. Yes, they were scary. Their image is scary. The scariest spaceships ever.
Now I just want to throw a quick shout out.
Yeah.
I just want to throw a quick shout out to two shows that I did. I'm not saying
did I?
Well,
you keep forgetting me, Adam.
Well, we won't forget you, but I will forget this if I don't say this right now.
Go for it.
I want to make sure that we don't miss out on giving honorable mention, and then you get your chance to talk, Carl, to Amazing Stories. And Jim Henson's Storyteller.
Amazing Stories, blah.
Well, it still has its place in history, no matter what you think of it. I'm not the biggest fan of it, but it does have its place. So, Carl, your turn.
Yeah, and it should be in the garbage, but that's beside the point. I'll mention something. First, I'm going to mention about Night Gallery. I love Night Gallery. And I watched all of it when I was a kid. I cried when it went off the screen. But my favorite Night Gallery episode is only a 5-minute episode. Sometimes they have these little bumper ones, right? And the one I love is the one with John Astin as the hippie who is in a car accident, and he thinks he's in heaven, and he's in this room with Burt Mustin and an older lady. I can't think of her name. And he's trying to talk about the Beatles, and they're talking about the farm and the beetle infestation. And it's and he just realizes at the end when they put on this old stack of Lawrence Welk records that he's in hell.
That's a great
one. It's just one of those ones that's so damn funny.
Oh, it's hysterical. It's hysterical. And I'm glad you mentioned the storyteller. I freaking love that show. I own it. And it's really only the first season. The second season with Gambone is okay, but that one goes with the Greek myths. But the folktale ones, it has my grandma used to tell me a story when I was a kid. And it's The Soldier and Death. Scared the living crap out of me when I was a kid. And then they had it on the storyteller, and it's brilliant. It's a brilliant, brilliant episode, and there's just so many good things in that show. I love that show. Can I jump in
and ask you, just back to Night Gallery, you mentioned your favorite. Are you also a big fan of Camera Obscura from the first season, which Rene Abattoir, who died recently, was in? That was probably my favorite episode on Night Gallery.
Yeah.
It's one of my top favorites.
Yeah, Rene Abattoir, yeah. He just passed away, and I loved him, too.
Now, what a career that fellow had.
Oh, good Lord. You know, I remember him from the Altman films. You know, from particularly
mm-hmm.
Brewster McCloud and things like that. A lot of people
right.
remember him as Odo. But
yeah,
I remember
him on Benson and Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. Yeah, but I go back further with him. And I loved his stuff. Loved his work. But yeah, Camera Obscura is a really good one.
Yeah, I'd have to identify that as one of the top episodes in Night Gallery. But obviously, there are more than that. But
I love the one too with Richard Kiley. I guess it's in the movie, who wants to escape in the picture, and he's a former Nazi.
Oh, yeah, that was one of the that was the third one of the film of the introduction to Night Gallery.
Right.
What do you call that? The pilot. They had three episodes in the pilot, which was a two-hour movie, and the Richard
mm-hmm.
Kiley was the third of the three. The second one was the Spielberg Joan Crawford collaboration. The first one was Roddy McDowell mm-hmm. in an old mansion where they were using paintings to show his uncle was coming back to get him from the grave, sort of a monkey's paw type of story.
Right. Good stuff. Good stuff.
Now, before we begin wrapping this up, I want to throw kind of a bonus out. It's not a series, but it is a movie, and it is an anthology film. Can anyone guess what I'm going for?
There's a whole bunch of them. Are you going early, or are you going Amicus, or what are you going?
I'm going to go for one from the 70s, from Dan Curtis.
Oh.
Dark Shadows.
Yeah.
Dark Shadows.
Oh, yeah. Trilogy of Terror.
The Trilogy of Terror. I've got that.
Excuse me, I have to go here. Okay.
Yeah.
That's my impression of the Zuni pedestal. It sucks, but what the heck.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Oh, yeah.
So would we
actually
all agree? Go on, Carl.
Okay, go ahead, Adam. No. You go ahead, Adam.
I was just going to say, would we all agree that it seems that horror, in a way, is what is best served in anthology form on television?
Yeah, I think, obviously, Death Valley Days was Western, Night Naked City was cop movie. There was others, but I guess in those days, horror was the prime genre or the focus, even though we said Twilight Zone was a mix of things. Outer Limits was some horror, but it was mainly science fiction, and, thriller was horror, but Night Gallery was horror. The early days, I think horror would have the edge. But there were other genres represented, too, in anthology.
You know,
I think the horror goes best in science fiction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say the fantastical, which would be horror, science fiction, and fantasy. But we are forgetting, don't forget, I don't know if you would call these anthologies, but, you know, the DuPont Hour and all of those shows back in the 50s that were dramatic shows. That were live.
Well,
I
mentioned some of that when I said Playhouse 90 and some of that. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I want to save all of that for a future show on more traditional anthologies, especially things like Playhouse 90 and Studio One. I mean, you know, this is where guys like Sterling made their bones. You know, this is where you had guys like Patty Chayefsky and the other great writers coming into their own.
And don't forget the directors like Frankenheimer and that too. All live
and Delbert Mann and I mean, Marty started out as a TV movie before becoming a feature film.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But yes. So
there
Carl.
We go.
So
yeah,
Carl, do you have anything? Do you have anything to add for the listeners in terms of what's coming up in the next couple of weeks for Deviant Legion?
At this point, you know, we're still recovering from Christmas, and I'm actually recovering from an illness. So now you have a show coming up on next week, don't you, Adam?
Yes, I do. I am actually in the middle of preparing one of three shows, depending on which guest I'm able to lock in. And it's going to be my 10th episode, and it's going to be a deep dive into a fairly seminal series, depending on the guest.
Okay, cool. Cool.
And that's all I want to say about that at present.
I know that Doc is, we're getting together some watches, and he's going to keep coming back with his show, The Sludge Pit. Doc has gotten a new job. He's moved up to Utica, and so they're working him like crazy. So he hasn't been able to do stuff. I've been sick, so that's part of it too. So I'm glad you're waving the flag for DLN right now. But we will have some things this coming week. I want to see also. I'll be getting in contact with people. We just lost a bunch of people this week. And I want to do a retrospective maybe in the middle of the week. So I'm going to talk to Doc. I'll talk to you, and I'll talk to Danae, and we'll see if we can get back together.
Yeah, let me know which day, and I'll try to clear my evening for that.
Okay, fair enough. I'll let you know.
Okay, so does anyone have any last thoughts to say about anything? I'll start with Alan.
Oh, I need to go downstairs and pull Thriller out of the off the shelf and start watching that again. That's for sure.
Worth it.
There's also a out there on DVD. There's a Hammer anthology series that was short lived. I would recommend if you can find it. That was a TV series. So just mentioning that off the top of my head. But, yeah.
I actually picked that up for $8 used and found out the discs didn't work. Had to take it back. Got my $8 back. But, hey, you know.
You tried.
I did. So, Sammy, do you have anything? Any final thoughts?
Just a quick shout out to Amicus, the British studio that worked at the time that Hammer was in its heyday. They made anthology films, horror anthologies, some of which would have been a perfect fit for some of the series we discussed, stuff like Tales from the Crypt, Vault of Horror, The House That Dripped Blood, Asylum, Dr. Terror's House of Horrors. These were all films that featured 3 to 4 to 5 horror stories that make me think that, you know, if the things were different, some of these could have wound up in some of the other series. Milton Sabotsky was the prime inspiration.
Absolutely. I mean, Sabotsky's style was right for it.
Worth getting.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody is fans of that, of those movies?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I love them.
Okay.
Yes. They're all on Blu-ray now, and I got them all.
Yes. I got the wall. You and I both.
Yeah, and I've seen pictures of Alan's collection, and I've actually been in front of Sammy's collection, and I can guarantee, I can vouch to the listeners, they are impressive.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
One thing I would just add to what Tammy was saying was that if we're talking about Amicus, let's go back a couple of decades from there, and let's point out the first horror anthology movie of all time.
Dead of Night. Dead of Night.
Exactly.
Dead of
exactly.
Night.
Dead of Night.
1945. Dead of Night.
Yep. One of the greatest horror films ever made.
Yeah.
That's on Blu-ray too now, folks.
Yes, it is. And then the Kino version has actually eclipsed the one that came out on Region 2. I have both of them, but the
yes.
Kino is actually better in quality.
Yes, it is. I have our collections we'll have to throw them together and see who's got more.
Yeah, and the double dipping is there too. Even though it's hard to explain that to my wife.
Yeah. Well, I didn't double dip as much as my wife would try to buy me something, and she'd come home and she'd like bring me a spaghetti western. I'm like, you bought me God's Gun. I already have God's Gun. What are you doing?
Oh, Jesus.
I looked up for 3 copies of God's Gun in the same year because. That seemed to be the Western that she kept buying or something.
You got to stay away from DVD Beaver. Don't be reading his reports.
Between him and Glenn Erickson, I can't. I go broke.
Yeah, his job is to get you to buy these things, I think, no matter what.
It works.
It does, yes.
Almost everything Glenn writes about, I buy, or sometimes I might even have them before by the time he's written about them.
Right.
Adam knows you borrow stuff from me.
Oh yeah,
okay.
I borrowed quite a bit from Alan over the last couple of years. He's keeping the topic on just. Television, he's the reason I was able to finish up watching Barney Miller and China Beach. And
yep.
He's the reason I finally got to see a good copy of Fantomas. I'd seen it before, but not that good.
No.
So I think that just about covers everything we have to say about unusual anthologies. So I want to thank everyone for coming. I want to thank Sammy for taking time. I know that Fridays are usually his night to go see movies. And I want to thank Alan and Carl for showing up as they always do. And I want to thank our listeners for being there. So why don't
thank you for having it. Thank you for having me. And,
oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure, Sammy. Glad you were able to make it.
Yes, it is. Yes.
And thanks to everybody else. This was a fascinating discourse.
Yes. So
to somebody who knows what I'm talking about.
Well, it's always nice to talk with people that enjoy the topic.
Oh, absolutely.
And the passion shows through with you guys.
Well, I get tired of going to work and saying, oh, are you watching that on Hulu? And I'm like, you take your Hulu and shove it.
Well, I have to say, in defense of Hulu, they're the only place you can get all 6 seasons of St. Elsewhere.
Oh, screw you and St. Elsewhere. Yeah. I love St. Elsewhere until the last episode. Thank you. Thank you very much.
But, so I will just say that it was once again a great episode. And thank you, Carl. Thank you, Sammy. Thank you, Alan. Let's say goodnight and sign off.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Good night, everyone.
Thank you. Good night, and we'll speak again soon. Thank you.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Absolutely.